Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans, not only in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, home of F101, but around the world. If you're hearing my voice, that can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. And as always, we're going to start off this episode with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in the world of F1. Rolex, potentially, and I mean like 90%, is not going to be the sponsor past 2024. That is right, the long-term timekeeping sponsor whose logo is absolutely everywhere. They seem to be the only sponsor of F1. They are officially ending their contract by the end of 2024. No reason from the spokesperson on why Rolex is starting to, you know, tick down the time until they're done in F1. There's no reason on why they're leaving. Is it going to make a massive change to F1? Absolutely not. You're just going to see a brand new watch logo. It's looking like it's either going to be Hublot or Tag Heuer as a replacement. The deal is worth $150 million a year. It is a multi-year contract. Now, when I say multi-year, I'm expecting like a 3+1, 4+1 contract, but there is no specific details on how long this contract will last. An end of an era. You know, Rolex has been around Formula One forever, major title sponsor. Do they bring anything to F1? No, not really. It's just massive, massive advertisement. It's just going to be a little weird not seeing that massive Rolex clock tick down every single weekend in the F1 season. Moving on, next topic. Ollie Bearman has officially signed with Haas. Haas's team is officially full for 2025. Congratulations, Haas. Congratulations, Ollie Bearman. If you don't really recognize that name, it's because this guy is mainly F2. He's been in the wings for F1. He's been learning a lot. He did make, I think it was a one race appearance at the beginning of the season. Scoring points on his maiden run, not just a couple points. He did crack the top 10 on his very, very first maiden race in F1. Carlos Sainz out with an appendicitis, I believe is what it was. He hasn't raced since just because obviously Carlos Sainz has been well, which is fantastic. But yeah, he officially has a seat. Now, you're wondering if he scored that high in a Ferrari, why did he go to Haas? Well, Haas is kind of unofficially the sister team of Ferrari. It's the same power unit, a lot of the same specs. They work hand in hand. So consider Haas the sister team of Ferrari, kind of like how VCAR is the sister team for Red Bull. It's a bit of a development team. I don't think Ollie Bearman's going to need a whole lot of development. He will, and in my opinion, this is going to be unfortunate for him, he will struggle in Haas to show his driving abilities, his driving capabilities. Now, the only reason why I say this is that Haas is, it's getting better. Haas's team, they've got a little bit more development. They're feeling a little bit more confident in their team, in their drivers. But it's not necessarily a proving ground to see how well you can drive. It's more of a proving ground on how well you can drive with a frustrating piece of equipment that can't keep up with the rest of the pack. Now, this will be, you know, a really, really good stepping stone for him, even if they don't bring Ollie Bearman up to Ferrari anytime soon because Lewis Hamilton has signed a contract with them. At least he'll be getting some experience, and if something happens, they're easily going to call him up. So, Ollie, congratulations on your very first full-time seat in Formula One. This brings the number of teams that don't have full-time drivers down to 6. Actually, Ollie Bearman's the only driver for Haas. Williams, they've got Alex Albon. Kick Sauber only has Nico Hülkenberg. Haas has Ollie Bearman. Alpine only has Gasly. Mercedes still have not signed Lewis Hamilton's replacement. It is still just George Russell by himself. We have no idea who's going to be able to take that seat. We don't know what's going to happen. And then VCARB only has Yuki Tsunoda. They have yet to sign Daniel Ricciardo or anybody else. And as I complete that thought, we've got breaking news that's coming across the F101 desk. Esteban Ocon has officially signed with Haas. It will now be Esteban Ocon and Ollie Bearman for the 2025 team and on. There is no stipulation on how long Esteban Ocon's contract is. I do think this is a last-ditch effort for Esteban to stay in Formula One. He's not exactly known as a super-friendly team player. And when you alienate most of the teammates that you've had, you kind of have to end up with what you want or what you get. Haas seemed to be very interested in Esteban Ocon. Apparently they like his driving style. They think he'll be a good fit for Haas. Hopefully it will be a good fit for both parties. Haas needs a driver that's seasoned that can deliver to show Ollie Bearman what he can do. At the same time, Esteban Ocon needs to learn how to play nice, because if he doesn't succeed in Haas, the only other teams that may or may not take him after a couple of years is going to be Williams, potentially. And they're just on the uptick. Their development is getting much better. The cars are getting faster, even though Logan Sargeant hasn't exactly been, winning anything or even getting out of Q3 more than twice in a half a season. They are on an upward trajectory. I do see Williams as a really good midfield team second half of this season, as well as Kick Sauber, but because they're becoming Audi in the next year or two, I don't see them picking up somebody like Esteban Ocon when they become Audi. I think it would just be a massive step backwards for them. But hey, you never know. If you want Ocon, you're going to take him. If not, there are plenty of F2 drivers that are waiting in the wings that want to come to F1, take over, and show people what they can do. And folks, that is it for the hot topics for this weekend. A little bit of a quiet weekend, which is fantastic, considering we only have a couple more weeks until the midseason break. And yes, I know this race that we're going to talk about is halfway through the season. Then silly season starts. Now, for those of you who don't remember or don't know what silly season is, it's essentially a couple of weeks where there's no drivers, there's no race, everybody takes time off, and then it's just a bunch of rumors. But 9 times out of 10, those rumors happen to be true, which is kind of weird. But the reason why it's called silly season is all these things that you're going to hear just end up sounding super, super silly. Like, oh, there's no way he would do this. There's no way this team would do that. It's exactly what happens 9 times out of 10. And it's starting a little early with who's going where, because the driver market is still so up in the air. It seems to be like the driver market and where everyone's going to go is relying on Carlos Sainz. I don't quite understand the reason for this. He's one driver. He can't dictate, or he shouldn't be able to dictate, what the rest of the field does. It's not like he's a Max Verstappen. It's not like he's a Lewis Hamilton. He doesn't have the pedigree behind him and the records to be like, hey, I'm going to choose where I'm going to go, and then everything else will just fall into place. But that seems to be the way that this season is going. So hopefully silly season won't be too chaotic and too hectic. And I'm looking forward to it. All right, let's get into it. Let's talk about qualifying for the Hungarian Grand Prix. Historically, the weather has a massive influence on qualifying. Not so much the race, but mainly on qualifying. The reason is you go one of two directions. Either it's windy, it's rainy, it's really, really shitty weather. Or when it's nice weather, it is blisteringly and unimaginably hot. There were some reports that this weekend in full practice one, full practice two, they got a little bit of everything. Now, when you're looking on the high end of the heat, you're looking at 42 degrees Celsius trackside. Now sit in a car, now drive around. It can be unbearably hot for these drivers, which means they got to focus that much more. So the weather for this weekend, it wasn't super hot yet. It wasn't super, horrible. It was that nice in the middle type of mix, which brought out sometimes the best and sometimes the worst out of the strategists. But let's get right into it. Q1. First thing right off the bat, Red Bull Ferrari bringing massive upgrades to the entire car. Now, this is not something that where they put a brand new wing on, brand new front end, brand new back end. It's in the culmination of smaller upgrades that they've been working on. So instead of doing massive pieces like A, B, and C, they're doing A1.1, B1.1, C1.1. It's something along that line. It's working all the big pieces together with the smaller pieces that should make sense. Now, is this going to help them on a track like this? Hungary is not exactly the type of track you want to bring a massive amount of upgrades with, because you only have one good straightaway and it's only two spots that you can actually pass to push your car into aerodynamic no man's land, figuring out the grip, figuring out what works, what doesn't. Is, like I said, it's not exactly the best place to do it, but at this point, you're almost halfway through. You will be halfway through the season. You're about to take a couple weeks off. You've got one more race before then. You got to get some stuff figured out. It seems like Ferrari and Red Bull kind of waited a little bit late to bring these upgrades out, just because it seemed like they didn't have a choice. They needed to get out just to get the data, whether it's consistent data or not. At least they'll have some kind of database to play with for the beginning of the second half of the season. Could they have done it a little bit earlier? Yeah, absolutely. I think they could have, but that doesn't necessarily mean they would be able to do it a little bit earlier. So we're going to see if that upgrade helps at all. Rain in Q1, 6 minutes, 45 seconds left in Q1. The rain did finally start to fall. It wasn't a massive downpour like you sometimes see in Japan or Spa or anything like that, or even Monaco. It's more of that it's raining and it's just enough to make that track a little bit on the slipperier side. It helps with the tire degradation just because it is so hot. They blow through these tires like there's absolutely no tomorrow. So it did help them out a little bit. Some drivers were more prepared for it than others. There's a lot of team communication, which is fantastic to see always. A lot more broadcast than it normally was, just to show the viewers and to get people a little bit more information on what the drivers actually hear, which is fantastic to see. It can also be a little bit overwhelming if you're new to F1. Like I said, some drivers dealt with it a little bit better than others. Rain started to fall 6:45 in Q1. Exactly at 6:45, Checo Perez, not exactly the greatest qualifying stint ever. He ends up in the wall, red flag, turn 8, oversteer, takes out the back end of the car into the wall. Now, it seemed like it was just a massive coincidence. Checo was trying to push the car to get that fast lap in because he was technically on the bubble of being kicked out of Q1. He wanted to get that lap time in before the really heavy, or what they thought would have been really heavy, rain started. Did not work out at all for him. Ends up red flagging the session. They do end up finishing the session with 6:45 left. Sargeant into the wall as well. He was able to continue. He's just pushing it way too hard. Again, another oversteer in a corner, ends up clipping the wall, not massively hitting it, but clips the wall, able to continue, finishes out Q1. Russell, kind of an odd thing, sets his time. He'd be like 13th when he sets his time. Now all of a sudden he can't go out again. It comes out that he did not have enough fuel in the car to finish Q1 to make it into Q2. Now, for those of you who don't know, if you do not have enough fuel in your car, now that doesn't mean it's not illegal to run out of fuel during qualifying or during a race. It does happen. The illegal part is there's not enough fuel left to take a fuel sample from the car to make sure you're not cheating. Essentially, it's their way of checking for steroids in a motor vehicle. You have to be able to have at least 1.5 liters of fuel left in your vehicle for them to test to make sure that you're running the specific regulations that the FIA and F1 put out. If you don't have enough, it's a fine. It's a disqualification from wherever you end up. So let's say Russell didn't make it out of Q2 because he ran out of gas. He's disqualified from all of qualifying. He starts at the very back of the grid. If it happens during a race, you're disqualified from the race, period. There's no points. Massive big deal. You get sent up to the stewards, huge team fine, and you get points off your license. You do not want to run out of fuel in Formula One. So George Russell not able to finish Q1. The reason for this is it's a theme that's starting to happen this entire weekend. The strategy for Mercedes just did not work out. You have to and by strategy, I mean you have to know when to push the car to warm the tires up. You need to know when to not push the car, to relax the tire speed, to save fuel so you can do that one last push lap to get into Q2, Q3, so on and so forth. They messed this up. They did too many push laps. They used up too much gas to try to get the tires into the window that George Russell felt comfortable for, and therefore, he did not have enough gas to run one the rest of Q1, and obviously didn't get the time that he wanted. He gets eliminated in Q1, as well as Checo Perez. Let's get right into it. Q1 disqualifications from 16th to 20th in order. Checo Perez, 16th because of the crash. If he would have ended up being able to continue to go, he would have made it into Q2. He was having a little bit better of a weekend pace-wise, but obviously the crash takes him out. George Russell, not enough fuel, ends up 17th. Zhou Guan Yu, 18th. Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly, 19th and 20th, respectively, are eliminated in Q1. Again, wrong strategy call for Alpine. The cars were looking decent. They could have easily made it into the top 15 for Q2, but they weren't on the track at the right times. They did their laps. They were in the garage. Now, all of a sudden, you've got the red flag out. They still don't decide to go out soon enough or early enough after the red flag finishes. They go out. They put in their times. They don't have enough time to improve upon their warm-up and one fast lap. When you sit for as long as these cars do, they do have warming blankets on the tires to keep them in the optimal temperature for optimal grip, speed, so on and so forth. They didn't do this. It wasn't enough time, or they spent too much time in the pits. Therefore, wrong strategy. Alpine is out on their own fault. No crash, no misinterpretation. It was just a really, really bad strategy from Alpine. And unfortunately, their drivers end up paying for it. And it would have been a very successful weekend for them. Q2, the rain has, the rain subsided pretty much. The track is drying out. It's rained enough to make everything kind of humid, but it's warm enough that it's almost drying as soon as it hits the track. Start of Q2, the usual guys are out there. It's lights out. These guys are going. It's nice and track. There's no spin out. There's no gravel. There's a little bit of gravel touching. There has been some modifications to the track, keeping these guys more on track with less track line, violations, keeping all four wheels on the tarmac, which is great. Only kind of weird thing is, Daniel Ricciardo, he sat there for, I think it was like 12 out of 16 minutes. He only went out with 4 minutes left. Now, there's absolutely no indication if there's anything wrong with the car, if they're just waiting for the track to get into better condition, if they're waiting for the other cars to make sure all the water's gone. No indication whatsoever, no word from VCarb, no nothing. Goes out with 4 minutes left, absolutely kills it. Daniel Ricciardo definitely on pace in qualifying. The car looks much smoother with him. It looks much lighter. It looks like he's in more control. Just a better weekend for Daniel Ricciardo all the way around. Yuki Tsunoda, same thing. VCarb's really coming into its own. They will at some point, if they pay attention to the car, if they don't upgrade themselves, they will be in the top 10 more often when it comes to qualifying and more importantly in the race. Some frustrating moments just before everyone goes out on their final lap. There was no red flag in Q2. When it's about 4 minutes left, everybody decides to go out again. You're going to do your warm-up lap, then you're going to do your quick lap. Everybody lines up at the exact same time. All 15 cars. And it's just painfully slow. Some of these guys are leaving the pit lanes. So what we're starting to see, because it's a longer season, they want to take, they want to take a little bit less, what do you want to call it? They want to take a little bit less oomph out of the cars. They don't want to beat up on them nearly as much, which means when they're entering the track, they're really taking their time coming out of the pit lanes. Unfortunately, when there's this many people left, that means that some people can potentially lose out on track time. So the stewards, what they're having to do is they are telling them, like, you can't stay in pit lanes so long to warm your tires up, to give yourself space. They have a set time that they have to leave pit lane now before everybody. Now, that being said, the time can be a little bit longer. These guys are still taking their time. This time was very, very lucky for everybody. Everybody made it out on track in time to get a fast lap. What we have seen in the past, and I do expect to see in the future, is when this happens again, most likely in Q3 or again the end of Q2, that they're just going to start taking their times. And you're going to see a lot of these guys be trapped at the back of the line, and they're not going to be able to get their track time in, which means they're not going to advance into Q1. Is this illegal? Technically, yes. Technically, no. It's a massive gray area. Are they going to start to use it more to their advantage to, let's say, Max is at the very back of the line? So all of a sudden, everybody starts to take their time leaving pit lane. All of a sudden, Max doesn't have enough time to get a quick lap in. All of a sudden, maybe he doesn't make it out of Q2. Maybe he's not pole in Q3. I think this is going to become a strategy at the end of this season and a major, major strategy at the beginning of the 2025 season. But let's go through the people who were eliminated. This is 11th through 15th in order. Nico Hülkenberg, 11th. Bottas in 12th. Alex Albon in 13th. Logan Sargeant in 14th. And Kevin Magnussen in 15th. Logan Sargeant, much, much better qualifying weekend this weekend as last as the weekend before. It was you know, he's coming into his own. He's starting to understand what Williams needs from him. They don't need him to beat Albon every single weekend. They don't need him to be in top 10 every single weekend. They know it's an unrealistic goal, but at the same time, they just want him to pay attention, to get things done that he needs to get done, and just be more consistent. He's starting to understand this. Hopefully we will see him more and more in Q2 and potentially in Q3 as the season goes on. Q3, it seemed a very, very, very hectic Q3, because as you watch the weather forecast, as it changes quite quickly, there was a potential for rain. Now, was there a big enough chance for as big of a rush these guys were taking? I don't think so. You look at the Doppler radar that they showed multiple times. These guys have done this before. There was a chance of rain. Okay, put it at a maximum of 20%. Granted, the weather does change. It does change quite quickly in Hungary. It's kind of like here in Canada, especially in Calgary. You wait 10 minutes and you'll get all four seasons. So, I mean, they were concerned that the rain was going to hit super, super heavy because they didn't know how heavy it was going to be. So everybody started to rush. Last Q3 is not that long. I think it's only like 8 minutes, 10 minutes. Unfortunately, because of this rush, because of this almost panic, another red flag in Q3, this time with 2 minutes and 13 seconds left, Yuki Tsunoda in the wall. Again, he hit some AstroTurf, which is a little bit wetter from the previous sprinkling from Q1 and a little bit left over from Q2, ends up putting the car in the wall, demolishes his car, able to keep the chassis, able to keep his power unit intact. It was more, I don't want to say superficial, but it was like the tires. It was more of the carbon fiber stuff that they were able to replace. No pit lane start for these guys, which is fantastic because then, you know, you start at the very back. Turn five, hit some grass, ends up in the wall. And it was, I mean, it looked worse than it was. Yuki was absolutely okay, which is fantastic. His engineers have a lot of work to do before they start the race on Sunday. And they did, it was surprisingly, with 2 minutes, 13 seconds left, they did restart the session, which is fantastic. Normally, if a crash is that big and it takes too long, they'll just end the session there no matter how much. It's like 5 minutes or less, they'll end the session time, because they don't want these guys rushing any harder than they need to get those track positions. But everything's cleaned up in a timely manner. Here we go. 2 minutes left, Q3. Are we going to see a ton of fireworks and a ton of really, really close qualifying time? This time, no, unfortunately. It was kind of clear cut on who was going to take pole position this time. It was slightly surprising. Not surprising on who got the qualifying, on who got pole, who got one and two, first row. It was surprising on the gap from the first two to the third. So let's just go through it right now and we'll talk about it after. Top 10 from 1 to 10, pole position, Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri, Max Verstappen in third, Carlos Sainz in fourth, Hamilton in fifth, Leclerc in sixth, Albon in seventh, Lance Stroll in eighth, Daniel Ricciardo in ninth, and because of the crash, Yuki Tsunoda obviously in 10th. Now, the gap from the front row to third, it's not like 0.03 of a second. It's not, you know, it's not a minuscule amount of time. It's 0.03 of a second. So obviously, whatever McLaren has learned and whatever they're doing it very, very, very well. Did Max have an amazing weekend? It was okay qualifying-wise. He was at the top of the sheets maybe once or twice. It seems to be that no matter what Red Bull does, McLaren right now has the answer for it. Max is trying. Checo, we'll say he's there. But it doesn't seem to matter what they're doing. McLaren is just the top of the heap right now. This might be the new norm when it comes to qualifying. Really good qualifying from everybody else. Alonso, Stroll. Stroll's really starting to come up. He's playing the team game all of a sudden. He knows what he needs to do. It's all of a sudden like he understands that he has teammates. He understands that he needs to be a team member and teammate opposed to just driving for himself. Imagine what that'll do to the team if they actually start paying attention and playing as a team. Lewis Hamilton, again, picking up the slack for George Russell being out in the first qualifying. Really, really strong, really on pace. He seemed to be one with the car. It didn't seem to matter what kind of weather was coming his way. He's just on point. The Mercedes development from the beginning of the season to this half of the season had like night and day difference. They had no one tuned in. They're getting dialed in. They're starting to compete. I don't see them going in any other direction for the next half of the season. And folks, that is all of qualifying. That is all of hot topics. I think this sets us up for a very, very good Hungarian race this weekend. And hey, without further ado, let's get right into it. All right, folks, it is time. It is officially race day, the Hungarian Grand Prix. We're talking 70 laps, 14 turns, 4.38 kilometers per lap, top speed of 315 kilometers an hour. Fastest lap back in 2019. It is the three-time world champion Max Verstappen with a 1:17. They didn't touch this time. Again, super, super fast, super clean. Let's just get right into it. The start kind of set the tone for the entire race. Remembering that McLaren's got a lockout 1-2. Max Verstappen is in third. He's not going to let this sit. He's not going to just be like, okay, I'm third, I'll do the best I can. No. Five lights out, away we go, and he is going right after it. At one point, midway through the very first turn on the first lap, 500 meters from the start line, they are three wide. You're looking at Norris on the, if you're going right to left, Norris on the inside, Piastri, and then Max Verstappen on the far right or far left. Was he ahead? I don't think he was. I don't think he was far enough ahead that he had any kind of complaint. He gets pushed off the track rightfully, not rightfully slow, so, but it made sense. You got three cars wide. They're 2.5 meters wide each. Not all three cars are going to make that turn. If it does, it would be picture perfect. First time in F1 history. Max gets pushed off. He takes his own little trip down the side road, which is still fully paved, ends up getting in second spot. That's the first, you know, the first, we'll call it, contentious point for Red Bull for this race. They didn't exactly have a best race. The strategy was about half there, because when you're looking at the Hungarian Grand Prix, you're looking at a couple of things. You're looking at a pit stop that lasts 21 seconds. You're looking at a track where there's realistically only two spots to pass. You're also looking at the fact that your pit stop strategy, because of the time, because of the only places to pass or two, is going to make or break your race. It can be one lap too early, one lap too late, and you're absolutely hooped. When you do a pit stop, because these guys are so close, you're dropping five spots. Like I said, if you pit too early, you're going to have to pit one more time. You're going to put yourself in the exact same spot. If you pit too late, no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to gain those spots again. You're going to kind of end up where you pitted. So you want to be able to count on your strategist. You want to be able to count on your teammates to be like, hey, I'm going to pit. Next lap, you're going to pit. We're going to work together to get back up to where we want to be, and it's going to be an absolutely 100% team game. On the forecast, because it's so hot, trackside temperature was 51 degrees Celsius in Hungary that day. They're expecting the very first early pit stops to be lap 7 of 70 on soft tires. This is how much this track just absolutely destroys Pirelli rubber. Now, soft, 7 laps. Hard tires, you're looking all the way up to 36. So it's almost, if you are a Lewis Hamilton, if you are a Fernando Alonso, and you just hit that right window, you can potentially do a two-stop race. If you're very, 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 very lucky, you can do a one-stop race. You're going to run hard tires with hard tires. The only thing with that is at the beginning of the race, you're going to lose so many spots, it's going to negate doing hard plus hard. A lot of these guys are doing mediums because they're going to last that much longer. Window space for medium tires in this race, about 14 to 16 laps. You can get your groove. You can find out what people are doing. The early guys that you don't really need to concentrate about, they're going to pit first. You can kind of do your strategy from there, but your strategy has to be on point. Everybody has to play together. Pit stops have to be fast. You got to be paying attention. So obviously the teams that everyone's going to be looking at, it's going to be Mercedes. It's going to be McLaren, and it's going to be Red Bull. During this race, Red Bull, they always have their own strategy. They don't have a tendency to cover off other teams because they're so confident in their car. In this case, the strategy for them this weekend, the strategy is usually good, but it wasn't that exactly great. The head strategist, I think, may have everybody kind of dropped the ball. They chose not to cover off the pit stops from McLaren or for Mercedes. The only reason I think they chose this is because Checo is so far back, he's not in the picture to help out Max. Max is on his own, which is what it's been for the entire first half of the season. If you're going to be a successful Formula One team, if you want to be a successful Formula One driver, you have to have a good teammate. You have to be a good teammate. And if you're by yourself as Max is, he's trying to figure out a strategy where he's going to defend both McLaren drivers, the 7-time world champion in Mercedes, and still give yourself enough wiggle room that if, let's say, the pit stop isn't exactly super fast, that you're still going to give yourself a chance to either podium or win the race. I think the strategy well is going to run a little bit dry before you know it. And this was kind of a chink in the armor. First of all, Red Bull choosing not to cover off Mercedes and McLaren on all three pit stops. They just wanted to try to get as far ahead as they possibly could, which is their general strategy in a race. They want to try to get that 5, 6, 7, 8 second gap between them and second place. So when they do a pit stop, they're not losing as many spots. The only thing with that is both McLaren and Mercedes, their pit stops were on point. Sub 3 second, probably 2.5 second pit stops, which means Red Bull's got to come in at a 2. The world record is 1.8. So they got to come in a 2 or a sub 2 second pit stop to keep that spot, or at least be in contention later on. It doesn't end up happening. It's a 3 second pit stop for Red Bull from Verstappen. Now, that doesn't seem like a massive difference. It's only 3 seconds. But when you see everybody else is doing a 2.5, that half a second is a massive, massive difference. That's going to put you in traffic. That's going to put you potentially behind 4 extra cars that if you save that half a second, you wouldn't be behind in the first spot. And the Red Bull's giving themselves more work to do than they absolutely need to. The only thing that might help Red Bull out is McLaren. Their strategy has to be 100% perfect. And for 99.9% of this race, their strategy was 100% perfect. They weren't double stacking their cars. They'd bring Norris in, next lap they bring in Piastri. Then the next time they do a pit stop, it would be Piastri and then Norris. They were playing that really good team game until it started to unravel. And then all of a sudden, the claws kind of came out from Norris with the expectation to give up the most prized thing and the most coveted thing that you can ask an F1 driver to do, and it's give away a race win. But we're going to cover that in a minute or two. By the time we hit lap 33, and I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but it was one of those races where there wasn't a ton of passing. There was some really good racing, but it always ended up being the top 4 guys. So we're going to jump around a little bit, give you guys the highlights of what you need to understand about this race to make it as enjoyable as possible. Lap 33. All of a sudden, Max is chasing down Lewis Hamilton for third. He's gone from 7th because of a really slow pit stop on lap 33. He's managed to get himself all the way up to 4th. Now, Max starts to complain about his brake balance. It seems like it didn't matter how hard he's pressing that brake pedal, he's going too deep into corners. Now, that doesn't sound like anything different from Max. He does like to brake really, really late into corners to get that track position. Except for when he doesn't want to brake late, he needs to give himself that position. He wasn't able to brake early enough. It essentially kept slowing him down, kept screwing up his line. All of a sudden, you hear he's got no confidence in the car. He's not happy with the strategy. He should have pitted earlier. He can't brake. He's got this. He's got that. It sounds like Max is starting to panic a little bit. This is the first time we've really heard him panic this season or even in the last 3 seasons. Now what he has to contend with, he's fighting Lewis Hamilton for 3rd spot. Now, for those of you who are maybe a little bit new to Formula One or don't really understand the history behind these two, they are, at times, cordial enough not to drive each other into the wall during a race. Now, there's been a couple of instances over the years where it was, to some people, super blatant, and to other people, hey, it's just a driving incident, depending on which camp you are a fan of. These guys will be nice enough to get the position but not get a penalty. Max is starting to panic. Now, you can only imagine what this will do to Max in his decision-making to pass Lewis Hamilton. It's never easy for anybody to pass Hamilton. It's especially not easy for Max to pass Hamilton just because of their history. It comes to a head with a few laps left. Max is fighting Hamilton. Hamilton is not giving in. What essentially happens is, now, if you're picturing this, close your eyes. We're taking a turn from right to left. Hamilton is on the left-hand side. Max is diving in on the right as he normally does. But because the low confidence in his car, because of the braking issues that he has, Hamilton sticks his line. He is exactly where he needs to be. as long as Verstappen stays in his line. Max would have and will pass him if he keeps his line. Max cannot keep his line. Did Lewis give absolutely no wiggle room and a bit of a, not a boxing move, but did he make like boxing him out, but did he make sure that Max had to stay on this line? Absolutely. And what happens when he doesn't is Max drifts a little bit to the left. And it, again, Red Bull fan, but this is 100% Max's own fault. He's too aggressive. If the car is not operating the way you need to find a different strategy. He ends up clipping the front tire of Hamilton and he ends up getting popped up in the air. This has happened a couple, this has happened one other time. And he literally goes over the front of Lewis Hamilton's car, smashes down on the track, almost hits the wall. Max is able to recover. He does finish the race. Unfortunately for Max, he drops another spot. So instead of fighting for third, now he has fifth. Now he's got to fight Carlos Sainz or Charles Leclerc for fourth. Max is not able to recover. It is a horrible, horrible, horrible day for Red Bull, for the strategy. Max is super frustrated. Him and his engineer, JP, they have a very specific and very special relationship. They've been working together for so long. You can hear the tension in their voice back and forth. You can hear Max starting to unwind and just complain about everything. And then you have to hear, well, you don't have to hear, but you hear JP coming in going, hey, we're not going to play this game. We're not going to complain over the radio like the rest of these teams. You need to stop complaining. You need to concentrate and you need to finish this race. It's essentially like siblings bickering back and forth. And the older sibling, the calmer sibling going, hey, we're not going to do this right now. Concentrate on what you're doing or you're going to suck even more than what you are. It ends up working. Max does end up staying in the top five. He does end up getting points, but definitely the wheels came off in the strategy this weekend. Now, was it the car? Was it the conditions? Was it solely the strategy that they put towards Max? Or was it a combination of all three? Is it the pressure that McLaren is officially putting on Red Bull now going, you knew we were coming for you. We did all of that we needed to do. And it looks like you're just kind of treading water. Has the distraction with Adrian Newey leaving and all this drama behind Checo, has this distracted the team enough where now they've officially compromised not only the driver championship by the end of the season, but the constructors championship as well. McLaren will not take this lying down. They're going to take every single advantage they possibly can. Meanwhile, they were not the only team and the only drivers having an extraordinarily shit weekend. No fault of his own. Absolutely not. Driving a solid race, potentially would have made top 10. Pierre Gasly, unfortunately, DNF, lap 38. He's got a hydraulic leak. Nothing he can do about it. He ends up not finishing the race. Again, not a really good weekend for Alpine, but at least they didn't do it to themselves this time. Mechanical failures happen. This is F1. These cars are like $20 million each at least. Things are bound to go wrong, but unfortunate weekend for especially Pierre Gasly. Not exactly a great weekend for Alpine in general, not a top 10 finisher at all this weekend, but still, I mean, hydraulic leak, there's better ways to leave a race. So now those of you who had watched the race, you know what's coming. You know what's about to happen. You know what we're about to talk about. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to breeze over. I'm going to give you the Cliff's notes of it. And then we're going to talk about it, you know, as the story of the race. So McLaren, 1-2. The entire race. I don't think at any point longer than two laps, they were not 1-2. Norris, 6.5 seconds ahead, lap 47, does his pit stop. Piastri doesn't do his pit stops till lap 48. Unfortunately, it was supposed to be the other way around. It was supposed to be Piastri for the lap 47 pit stop and Norris for lap 48. Norris chose when to go, or his engineers chose when to go in. It was a tire management type thing. They wanted to go to the very end. Pit stop. Lap 48 of 70, you got to be able to have control of your tires, control of the temperature, so you can get to the very end of the race without blowing a tire or having to do another pit stop. Both of these guys, really, really, really good tire management. Now, from there on out, the team orders kind of came in and the tension really, really started to build. Like I said, we're going to cover that at the end of the race because this is a very long, long topic. So let's just... I don't want to say let's skip to the end of the race. I mean, we're lap 63 of 70. No crashes, no more red flags, no yellow flags. Really good race, really good conditions. These cars were going as fast as they possibly could. And it was a very, very, very entertaining and yet somewhat stressful race. Let's cover the top 10. Long story short, Oscar Piastri gets his first win in Formula One. It goes Oscar Piastri, Lando Norris, Hamilton in third, Leclerc in fourth, Max in fifth, Sainz in sixth, Checo Perez in seventh, George Russell in eighth. Really, really good comeback from being ending out in Q1 because not enough fuel. He put his nose to the grindstone. His strategy, flawless, ends up in the top 10. Yuki Tsunoda in ninth, and Lance Stroll rounding out the top 10 in 10th, getting those points that he absolutely needs for the team, finally becoming the teammate that Fernando Alonso needs him to be. Drivers standing, let's talk about it. Max Verstappen's in first with 265 points. Second, Lando Norris with 189. Leclerc is in third with 162 points. Carlos Sainz is in fourth with 159. Oscar Piastri is in fifth with 149. Lewis Hamilton is in sixth with 125. Checo Perez has now dropped to seventh with 124 points. George Russell's in eighth with 116. Fernando Alonso is in ninth with 45 points. And rounding out the top 10 yet again, Lance Stroll in 10th with 24 points. Constructors' Championships, huge, huge change in the Constructors' Championships. I saw this coming. I told you it was going to come. Red Bull still first with 399 points. McLaren has officially passed Ferrari. They are in second with 338 points. Ferrari drops to third with 322. Mercedes still holding fourth with 241. Aston Martin's in fifth with 69. V-Car is in sixth with 33 points. Haas is in seventh with 27 points. Alpine is in eighth with 9 points. Williams in ninth with 4 points. And good old Kicksalba, no points at all, period. Still 10th with 0 points. So that, ladies and gentlemen, folks, F1 fans, that is your summary and your breakdown of the Hungarian Grand Prix. Now, it's time to move into the story of the race. Take a deep breath because here it comes. The McLaren team strategy. Normally, a team strategy like this is well thought out. It is very much communicated very well, but it's also in a situation where there are championship implications on the line at the end of the year. Okay, so the perfect example I'm going to give that I can think of, Mercedes. Valtteri Bottas, Lewis Hamilton. Hamilton was in such a close race with Max and everybody else that Valtteri Bottas pretty much played the perfect wingman. Hey, you're winning the race. We're going to get clear points. That's fantastic. We need you to slow down. Hamilton has to pass you because he is in contention. He's within, you know, like 50 points of the world championship to his contender. You're really not. You're playing the team game. Let him pass, get those points. Mercedes did it correctly for the most part. There's a couple times it was a wrong call, in my opinion, but they showed the perfect masterclass of what team strategy can be. McLaren is still learning team strategy. They have two drivers that are super, super hungry that want to get as many wins as they possibly can. Super understandable. The only thing that's the problem with that is Lando Norris just won his first race this season. He only has one. Mercedes is another example. Valtteri Bottas has won a handful of races. Lewis Hamilton has won, like, he's been on the podium 200 times as of today. So, yeah, kind of a little bit of a difference here. Norris wants to win his second. Oscar Piastri hasn't won anything yet. Okay, it's only your second season, bro. You're not a Max. You're not a Lewis Hamilton. It may take you some time to win a race. Now, I'm using win in this context as a massive air quotations, and I do not believe, and I'm not considering this a win for Piastri. Yes, he finished first. Yes, technically in sport, he won the race. He was given the race. Lando Norris sacrificed the race. He played the team game. So let's break this down. Norris pits before Piastri. Piastri has issues catching up. At one point, there's like six laps left. Lando Norris, without pushing the car, is 6.5 seconds ahead of Oscar Piastri. The call has come across the radio for the last 15 laps, and you're starting to hear the excuse. Hey, your tires are getting really warm. How about we slow down a little bit? Tire life, all this kind of stuff. And now they're starting to almost beg him to slow down. Hey, remember team sport, it'll come back to you, all this and all that. Obviously, the team strategy was that Oscar Piastri was supposed to win this race. They have scripted this out. That's my issue with this mainly, is that you've scripted a win. Now, this next comment may upset some people, but it is what it is. This isn't fucking WWE. This is entertainment. Don't get me wrong. This is not scripted entertainment. These are athletes in their sport competing. Any other sport, you're not going to come across going like, hey, how about we let the other team win just to make them feel good? No, if you're going to demolish a team, demolish the fucking team. Within McLaren, you have Lando and you have Piastri. Yes, they are teammates when it comes to the Constructors' Championships, but they are the first and second competitors to each other in the entire grid. You're asking a competitor to give up a win in a sport. You don't do this. If the strategy calls for Piastri to win, but he can't keep up, guess what? Tough shit. You don't get to win because you can't keep up. What? Are they going to hurt his feelings? It's your second year, Oscar. Come on, buddy. You need to put in more effort to win a race. You didn't win this race. Lando decided to give you this race because he's a team player. They're promising him that, well, this will remember what Oscar's done for you to help, all this and all that. Okay, which is fair. Oscar was able to help you get some higher placing, podiums, all that kind of stuff. But you did the majority of it on your own. This is the team literally begging, in my opinion, their number one driver to help out their number two driver to get a win because, well, that's the way it's supposed to go. McLaren, listen up. Zach Brown, listen up. It's a fucking sport, right? Let them compete. If he can't keep up with Lando, don't make Lando stop. If they're a half a second apart, if they're 500ths, 5,000ths of a second, okay, that's different. It's so close. It's an easier judgment call. Lando is 6.5 seconds ahead of Piastri. And there's 3 laps left when Lando finally decides. And you can tell he's having this massive mental battle with himself going, do I give up the thing that I'm here to achieve, which is a win? Or do I play the team game and give up the thing that I'm here to achieve, which is a win, for someone, in my opinion, did not deserve the win? But everyone's acting like, oh my God, it's his very first win in Formula One. Oh my God, he's on this track. It's not his win. He did not win it on his own. They gave it to him. There's going to be a massive asterisk against this win for him because he knows, his sponsor knows, his team knows, the fans know, he didn't win the race. It was given to him by a teammate that is much more team orientated than I think I would be. If I've only won one Grand Prix and I've killed this race, my strategy is perfect. I haven't fucked up. My team's on point. And now you're asking me to give up my second win? There are some drivers that drive for years and never get one win. Don't even think about 2 wins, 3 wins, 4 wins. Now you're asking me to give that up. Lando Norris also has sponsors that he has to communicate with, that he has to answer to. His sponsors must be absolutely pissed, not only because it's less advertisement for their team, but because Lando chose not to win. Some sponsors may like that you're a team player, you're going to go far, and that's what we stand for. But ultimately, if you're a sponsor, you want your team that you're sponsoring to be number one. You want that driver to be number one. You don't want to give up that win just to help your lesser teammate. The McLaren, call him head race engineer, head principal, because Zach Brown wasn't there this weekend. He said nothing. He didn't come on the radio at all for 15 laps. If they wanted this drama to end and to give him a little bit more safe face and a little bit less mud on the team's face, you don't broadcast this and you go on. Seidel needs to come on and tell Lando, hey, team orders, team directive, slow down, let Oscar catch you. But no, they let it drag on. They got it super awkward for everybody, including Lando, including Oscar. You were given your first win. You didn't actually win this race. You should be second, in my opinion. I don't believe that this strategy was proper for McLaren. I believe they should have let Lando win and then reevaluate behind closed doors, going, hey, I know this was the plan. This is what we had set out, but you're 6.5 seconds behind. You need to be able to catch up. You need to be able to at least stay with Norris so it doesn't look like it's absolute team orders. Team orders happen. You want to make people happy, but this is not the time to do it. This is not the situation. Let Lando win. Let him take that second victory. Just give it to him. It's not going to destroy Oscar's, you know, fragile mindset. They're both there till like 2028 and beyond. Let Lando win the race. Not let Lando. Just don't give him team orders. Let them race. Let them compete like you know they're supposed to. Everybody else would have. So why take that away from Lando? That's the story of the race for me. I think that overshadows the entire race, the entire effort that anybody else gave, the effort that Norris did, the effort that Piastri did. If you come up short, you come up short. But now you're taking all of that effort away from you because you have to give him the win because we're telling you to, because we want our players, we want our drivers to be equal. That's not how sport works. There's always a team that's better. There's always a player that's better. There's always a driver that is better. If McLaren can't figure this out, I don't think the strategists that are there need to stay. I think they need to go because they need to keep this team competitive. Because who knows what's going to happen next time? If Piastri's in this situation and they tell him, hey, let Norris pass, is Piastri going to let Norris pass? Is he going to give up his second podium win for Lando's second podium win? You can only trust your teammates so far because people are people and competitors are